The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another weekly look at the world of non-league football. This week we talk National League with the assistant manager, top of the division, before a power surge attacked the jibber-jabber mixing desk and cut him off a little bit earlier than we had anticipated. We also celebrate the start of this season's FA Vars competition with Phil Annetts and the chairman of a club embarking on their first venture into the competition. Plus, rounding off the week, editor-at-large at the non-league paper, Mr. Matt Batcock, who also helps round off the show and previews this weekend's non-league paper. Plenty to discuss with him and all my guests, so please sit back, relax, and let's get matters underway. So let's open the show with, I think, a debutant to the non-league football show, although as a friend of Dave Anderson, I'm sure he's well versed in what we do, and equally we are in what he does too. Joining Dean Brennan's coaching staff earlier on in the year, he played a big hand in guiding them to safety last term in the National League, and I'm sure he is one of the driving forces behind their unbeaten and table-topping start to the season this term. So it's a warm welcome to the non-league football show to assistant at Barnet FC, Mr. John Dreyer. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much, Tim.
It's early days, of course, but four wins from four games in, top of the National League, start of the season, a great place to be. I'd imagine the same is true of your dressing room this season.
Tim, it's been a fabulous dressing room all the way through pre-season. I mean, it's been amazing how well the lads have gelled together. We've got some great characters within the group, and they've all had a tremendous pre-season. Got themselves really fit, and it's obviously contributed to the decent start we've had.
Yeah, and I look at that squad now, and it's been a subtle and not lots of fanfares and fallouts, but it's certainly remarkably different from when Dean first arrived at the Hive, and indeed when you first joined up with the coaching team there. I sense it's a fairly settled tribe now.
Yeah, I would say so. I think the key thing is, last year, I mean, to put things in perspective, I remember joining right at the end of February. Our first game was at Torquay away, and I did some work with the back four ahead of the game, and I think three of the back four didn't even play, and that was on the Thursday before the Saturday game. So we used one of the players out of that back four that I was working with on the day that actually played on the Saturday at Torquay. I mean, it was remarkable, you know, we just lost three players in a blink of an eye. And that seemed to be the sort of sequence for the majority of the season. The players were very unfortunate with injuries, or I should say the club were very unfortunate with injuries. And I think that was one of the key motivating factors when we recruited this year was, you know, we needed players to be out on the pitch and had a history of playing regularly without injuries and hampering their progress. So, you know, that all contributed. As I say, you know, there was, I think we had one player went down the whole of pre-season, which is very unusual. So, so that all of these things sort of have helped contribute to the start.
And I know from observing and talking to Dean Brennan over the years, he's very good at putting together a team who all know their job. They do what they do best, but also for the benefit of the unit and the team as a whole. It's a finely tuned machine that sometimes needs some oil or maybe some WD-40 every now and then. But do you sense as well that the engine is running well now?
We've had an encouraging start, so you'd have to say yes. The engine is running well. As I say, there's always a little bit of WD-40 that needs applying along the way, but I think we're not getting too carried away. That's for sure. We know full well. Anyone who had attended our games, we rode out like a very good Gateshead team, who could have been two up before we struck. And then we went to Yeovil, another great team, and there were some really terrific players. And they could have been two up as well. So we had to ride our luck at times, and Laurie Walker kept us in it with some fantastic saves. But crucially, we've always hung in games. We've worked really hard, and you know, we've managed to score two goals in each of the fixtures. So, you know, a little bit of luck, yes, maybe. But, you know, there's this never say die attitude, which I hope we can, you know, keep going throughout the season, because it's a long, hard season. Anyone can beat anyone in this league. And, you know, we're going to have some tough times ahead, I'm sure of it. But, you know, listen, you'd rather get out of the box well, quickly and well, as we have done, than not.
Yeah, indeed. A big game, though, Friday up at Chesterfield. Equally, they haven't lost this season, and had that big win over Wrexham as well, which I'm sure was a big morale boost to them the other week. A good test for your guys, though. And Chesterfield are going to be expected to be challenging for honours come the end of the season. But has Barnet got the same aspirations, albeit knowing you've probably got not quite the same means at your disposal? But, you know, it's so tight in the National League. You can go on a run, or you can, you know, go on a bad run. But is the club looking to try and, you know, at least hit the playoffs this season?
Well, you know, we're all motivated to do well. And as he's quite rightly said, everyone will have different budgets. There'll be some big budgets. There are some massive budgets within this league. And everyone has to do it in their own special way. And we're doing it in our way. As I say, we've got a really good group of lads that are prepared to put one foot in front of the other, work really hard for each other. And, you know, what we're just trying to do is put a team that the supporters can be proud of, and we can all be proud of, and do it out in our own special way.
Yeah, I think that's the key of managing expectations as well. You had the 18th place finish in the end last term, but 16 points clear of relegation. Barnet have, of course, achieved Football League football before against clubs with more resources. We all know that your training facilities at the Hive probably rival many clubs higher up. But you look at the table, you look at the names there, you look at the managers there, the clubs there, the fact that, as you said, you know, any club can beat anybody. Every club already has at least a point in the National League. It's never been so strong and never been so hard to get out of, I don't think, this is a division.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, you only got to look at Wrexham, the big spenders last season, didn't quite get the job done. So they'll be motivated to put that right. But I think, what you know, the other thing as well, you see our facilities, you see teams come in, and a lot of these players want to be a part of that as well. So they put, you know, their performance gets elevated when they come down to the Hive. And I think because we have, you know, there are obviously others within our league that have had league experience, but we're one of the teams that have had league experience. And so you've got the likes of well, many other teams within the league, you know, where we're probably a big scalp, even though some of them have probably got bigger budgets than us, yeah. Strangely enough. But they still see us as a big scalp within the group and within the league. And so, you know, and I think the fact that we have started well, you know, again, we've got to deal with a certain type of pressure of actually being at the top. But as I say, it's still far too early to get carried away and start thinking about playoffs or anything. We'll just go one game at a time, as we have done up till now.
Yeah.
And try and get points every time we go out there.
I'm intrigued about your sort of how you see the National League as well. You've got your own experience of non-league management, you know, Maidenhead United, where also Football League experience too. Both at Preston and an assistant as well. Is it that pro game knowledge as a player, as a coach, etc.? Is that more of an asset in the National League than your knowledge of the non-league game?
Well, I certainly don't think it hurts, but it's also, you know, a big plus if you've got really good knowledge of the level and even the levels below. It doesn't hurt to have good knowledge of, you know, Conference North, Conference South, Ryman's, Southern League, all these different levels. Now, I've been quite fortunate in respect, you know, both my sons have been playing at you know, level three and level four. So I've been watching a lot of non-league football prior to me actually coming into Barnet. And you do get a feel. I mean, listen, the game has changed in general. Even, you know, you're going back to when I was managing Maidenhead, the game has changed and come on leaps and bounds. The pitches are so much better as well. The condition of the pitches. So there's so many pluses connected to lower level football. What in terms of what do I think of the level? I think the level's as good as it's ever been.
You said there that how non-league has changed dramatically since those days. Yeah, your time at Stevenage and FA Trophy winners. Where do you think non-league's going next? You know, I'm already seeing a step three, step four, even step five, where we've got, you know, data vests for the players. We've got probably more people on the bench than I've ever seen ever before. Is there too much information now?
Yes, I think there probably is. I mean, it's not a bad thing. It all filters down, of course. You know, having GPS sometimes. The information is good. Sometimes it isn't good. And I won't go into the reasons why, but yes and no. But I think what you need to do as well is look at the players that are dropping out of the league that can't get clubs. There are so many. And of course, these players are all filtering down. And as long as they manage their own expectations in terms of you know, their wages and all that kind of thing, these players are dropping it, filtering down to all levels of non-league, and so it only enhances the levels and brings a better product all round, and I think that's showing when you see some of the players at this level.
And our mutual friend Dave Anderson always sings the praises of assistant managers, always sings the praises of yourself as well, but the best ones he always says are like a vital cog or spring in any machine, going back to that engine sort of analogy. Your own CV shows exactly that, making a vital difference to good managers. Is your role at Barnet one of balancing players with management or balancing management with players?
Well, both. I mean, first and foremost, you're there to support the manager in anything he does. That's the role. That's the role you're given, and you know, and back him every step of the way. And that's what I tried to do.
And then there was a weird power surge locally that seemingly played havoc with various local businesses and effectively killed the jibber jabber mixing desk. Hopefully, we can get some audio paramedics onto that in the next coming days, so we can be back again properly next week. Although the call didn't drop, and my conversation with John continued, although you only really miss what he's setting out his match day routine for a Friday night game, and then also his goodbye. But a shame to cut him off in his prime, but I'm sure we will have him back on the show very, very soon. So thank you to John Dreyer, and good luck to Barnet on Friday night and for the rest of the season. So he's a busy man, but my next guest always has time for us, indeed always has time for myself, which I'm always very thankful for here. He's the Mr. Ben of football, with many hats, many guises, but always the man in the know when it comes to the stats of the greatest football association competitions. This week we celebrate the start of the FA Vars this season, so it's a warm welcome back to the Non-League Football Show to at FA Vars Fact File, Mr. Phil Annette. Welcome back, Phil.
Hi, Tim. Always good to be back, no matter what hat I happen to be wearing. And you're right, it is a very busy time with both this and the FA Cup at early stages, and lots of games involved in all the rounds. So, yeah, looking forward to the FA Vars this weekend.
I'm now envisioning you walk into Mr. and Mrs. Factfile's house, and there's a big hat stand just inside the door there with different hats that Phil has to put back on. Anyway, well, make sure he's got his Vars hat on this week. He had a great week last week, though, for the FA Cup, and I know you took in a couple of days, but it is FA Vars this time around. It all begins 586 clubs in this season's FA Vars, which sounds a tremendous number, but I'm sure you're going to tell me otherwise.
Well, it is a big number of clubs, but it is lower than it has been in recent times. I think the lowest for about 7 years, and that's all because of the the way the restructure has happened, in that we've got a defined number of clubs at step five and step six in the structure, and they are the clubs that will contest the FA VARs, and that's how the situation will be ongoing.
Yeah, and you understand it in a way, because it does give a bit more structure to this competition as well, doesn't it? And sort of like, I guess it gives the clubs more to strive for. We've got a new sponsor too, as well, Isuzu. I guess they'll be driving the competition on.
Okay, keep going.
But I guess for them as well, you know, coming in when there's this sort of almost new look competition, it will hopefully help them embrace the competition a bit easier as well.
Well, I think it's good to have an association with this competition, because it's hugely loved by everyone who's involved. And I know that Buildbase did a great job of supporting the clubs involved, and we hope to see the same from Isuzu, and that they get a halo benefit from being associated with all these different clubs up and down the country.
Yeah, 352 clubs then in this round is the first qualifying round, for which, once it is indeed true, it is the first qualifying round of the competition. So again, I think that obviously that'll help other people come into the competition for the first time, or sort of try and understand how the competition works. So they'll help them embrace this first round of the competition. 176 ties. So much to take in again for yourself. How do you keep abreast of everything going on and consider everything when you're trying to prepare these stats?
It's a challenge, I have to say, but I have a few areas that I try to look at, like new clubs or common ties, or clubs equaling or beating their record runs or big scores, and then looking for just any nuance that might jump out at me as I'm analysing and scanning through all of the actual ties that are there. So, yeah, there's always loads of stories. I capture some of them, and there's probably many, many more.
Yeah, as ever in the world of non-league, there's always someone to remind you of something you've forgotten. Now, as ever, it's a magical mix, as you say, of old and new, highs and lows, history being made. I love the fact that even now, there are still a number of first-timer clubs competing in the competition.
Yeah, and some great, wonderful club names as well within that mix. You've got Hart Perry University as one club. I've never heard about them before this competition. And alongside them, you've got London Samurai Rovers, who I know they're in the Combined Counties League, because my local club, Wallingford, played them last year. But again, a fantastically exotic name. And I think there's about eight clubs in total who will be participating in the VARs for the very first time. And as we know with this competition, any club who takes part in it has as much chance as anyone else of getting all the way to Wembley. So they'll be extremely excited as they set off on their journeys this weekend.
Yeah, and talking of that Wembley dream, that hunt for Wembley glory, there's also, yeah, it shows the breadth and the depth of this competition. I think six former winners of this very competition competing as well.
Yeah, we do, yes. So it's very unusual, isn't it, to have a cup competition starting in the qualifying round with former winners taking part. And we actually have two of them coming head-to-head. Stansted are hosting Hoddesdon Town, and Hoddesdon were the first ever winners of the FA VARs way back in 1975. So, you know, at least one former winner is going to exit at this first stage.
And Hoddesdon Town, I believe, has a particular place in your history as well, though, Phil.
Well, they do, because I did. I was living in Epsom at the time, and I went to the very first FA VARs final, so it was great to go to that game. I didn't realise at the time that I was at the very first FA VARs final, and just enjoyed my day out at Wembley, apart from the result, which went against Epsom Newell. But yes, that was my first association with the FA VARs, and Hoddesdon Town were part of that.
Well, I see those sliding door moments. You never know when they may come. And yeah, you went as a fan of the opposition. It wasn't the day to be, but that's part of the FA VARs almost, because the FA VARs is always a very friendly competition that, you know, new friends made, and often lots of old friends reacquainted. And as ever, I love the fact that there's lots of those reacquaintances happening this round. It's something like 30 ties this weekend where clubs have faced each other before in this competition.
Yes, and some will have more fonder memories than others of past meetings. One such coming together is Biggleswade United and Southend Manor, who are meeting for the third time in the competition. Southend have won both previous occasions, most recently just last season, where they ran out 8-0 winners. We know the challenges that Biggleswade United were having at the time at the start of last season, and they'll be very keen to show that they have turned the corner and can give Southend Manor as good a game as they can, and probably will be very keen to avenge last season's defeat.
Yeah, it is friendly, but it's a competition, and it's ever competitive, and there's inevitable grudges as well. Another one I spotted as well, I think you'd flagged up for us all, was Connard United fans have been waiting a decade since an 11-0 defeat to Haverhill United. Now's their time to avenge it. And I imagine there's a few people that remember that game, and it's one of those things that will sort of niggle with you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, nobody likes to be on the wrong end of a double-digit defeat, that is for sure. Whether it's eating it away them or not is another matter. But yes, there is likely to be some people who are at that game and who will be keen to put it behind them by getting a victory this weekend.
Yeah, and I also know that you love a quirky, something to do with lexicography. Yeah, I've got somebody else's teeth. Yeah, words, yeah. Yeah, that's easier. You love those sort of word associations, that sort of thing. And the one involving Penn and Tyler's Green, a club that I know fairly well from my previous games with Hayes and Yeddy United, and when I'd pop along to a local game, that sort of thing. Penn and Tyler's Green, if you were drawing out the numbers or the balls out of the hats, you'd almost only have to use one finger, I think, wouldn't you, for the Penn and Tyler's Green balls?
Well, they haven't been participating for too long in advance, but they do have a little quirky stat so far that they're only being drawn against clubs in the first half of the alphabet, so they're up against Burton Park Wanderers this time around, and we shall see if they can progress and maybe jump into that second half in time for the next round.
No, I love stats like that, and I also wonder how you ever sort of think these things out. I suppose you've got a series of your mind works in a similar way to mine, which you may think that that's, you know, I don't know, some might think that's praise, some may not think that's praise, but I always like to see these odd patterns, and maybe that just makes us an odd couple, but plenty of stats and facts there. Anything else, Phil, that you think we should be while we're standing on the terraces this weekend, whether at the FA Vars or at our local league game, what can we be entertaining people in the bar or on the terraces with this weekend?
Well, I mean, obviously, just go and enjoy your games and make sure you do support your local club. In terms of the Vars, everybody has as much chance of winning the competition as anyone else. I've said it before, it's an egalitarian competition, and the cup finals have proven to be open to anyone, with at least one club in every final always appearing there for the very first time. So, you know, just go and enjoy the game and keep your fingers crossed that this year is your year.
Yeah, and plenty of chance to enjoy the game as well. Even if you're off to go and watch your usual club that you go and watch at the weekend, there's games on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, various different kickoffs as well going on. So plenty of opportunity to maybe take in an extra game this weekend, taking an FA Vars game on top of your usual football diet. You've obviously got loads of stats to jiggle and juggle with, Phil, but are you off to any FA Vars games this weekend?
Yeah, I'll probably end up at Milton United, who are taking on Longwell Green Sports on a Saturday. So it does have a quirky stat for me, because it's the first time Longwell have faced a club beginning with the letter M. So just on that minor side, that will do for me as a game I'll go to.
I really do hope that you've got a massive Excel database or other programs are available. And you've not got, I can just, and now I, as well as the vision of you walking into your house and a big hat stand with different hats, I've now see one of those boards with different like record cards in little pockets all around the whole of your house, and you're going around with the Maybe this is a... This is probably a music video of the 1980s that I've seen, and I've just crossed it with our conversation, Phil. But we bow down to you week in, week out for your knowledge, your stats, and all the work you put in. Massive thanks to you as ever. Just remind people where they can follow you, find out more about all those great stats and facts, but both for the FA Vars and for the FA Cup.
Well, I'm very prominent on Twitter, so follow me on FA Vars Fact File for that competition and FA Cup Fact File for that different one. And through both of those, you can get access to all my blogs that cover previews and reviews of all the rounds as we go through the competitions.
Lovely stuff, Phil. Thank you as ever. Enjoy your weekend, and thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show.
Cheers, Tim. Speak to you soon.
So let's hear from one of those clubs preparing for this weekend's first qualifying round in the FA Vars. Indeed, one of those eight clubs competing in the competition for the first time. To give us some insight, it's a warm welcome to the Non-League Football Show. A welcome to Chairman FC St Helens, Mr Steve Leather. Welcome to the Non-League Football Show, Steve.
Thanks very much for having me.
Well, it's a pleasure to get you on first season competing in the FA Vars. But for a club only formed in, 2014? That's a massive achievement. I'd imagine there might be a little tear in your eye come kickoff.
Tears of joy, pain, anguish, you name it, I've gone through the lot. Yeah, you're absolutely right. 2014 is when we really started ramping things up regarding the open age side of things, and we've kind of accelerated a lot and struggled to keep up with the performances on the field. They were excelling themselves, and our challenge as a club was to try and fulfil the ambitions around the pitch as well. So, and you can imagine the red tape surrounding that. It's an achievement in itself. So, yeah.
I think that's the thing that we're always trying to convey on this show. I've been involved with my club, Hazen Yedding, for my 25th year this year. And until you've been involved running a football club, you can't explain to anybody else the pain, the pressure, the pleasure as well. But it's unique to anything else, even whether you're involved at work or whether you're involved in other community activities. Non-league football's just different.
It is, and it consumes your life. when you've got something you've been in ambition to do, whether it's voluntary basis or community basis or not, it's that drive but it does consume your life. And until you're actually in those shoes and on the other side of the fence or inside the clubhouse, no one really understands what's going on. You can explain it as long as you want, but until you're in the mix, no one ever knows. And those people that have been in the game long enough and gone through that pain and sweat will only ever understand that.
Yeah, but it is. This is one of your. This is one of the reasons you've done it, isn't it? This weekend, yeah. I mean, obviously, last year winners of the Cheshire Premier League. You're taking a spot in the Northwest Counties Division One North this season. What are you, fifth? Five games in, seventh in the table. One win, two draws. You're up against clubs with far greater history, like Backup Borough. Is it a case of you finding your feet this season, and as you say, almost trying to catch up off the field with the lads on the field?
100%. You know, when the team got promoted and the managers come to you and ask you for goals for the season, which I've always done with our managers in the past, and I'm very fortunate and blessed. I've got a great management team, but they do come to us and ask us for those targets for the season. And you know, this season was a pretty simple one: stay out the bottom three. And I'm a big believer that we just need to get through this first season at Northwest County Step 6. To establish ourselves and find our feet. And, you know, last Saturday against Bacup Borough was a classic example of types of teams we're going to be facing. And it was a loss. And we're not used to being losing over the last couple of years. But that's a type of team that we're going to be up against. And it was a learning curve for both players, management and staff alike. So, yeah, it's about finding our feet 100%. And we've got no ambitions to do anything spectacular this season, only to survive.
Yeah, what spectacular. You might get to Wembley in the FA Vase yet, but
that would be nice.
You're another side that boasts joint managers in Ollie McBride and Jack Graham, and we often get the viewpoint of why that works from the manager side of things. But I'm intrigued how it works with a chairman as well. Do you have one main point of contact with the boys? Is it more like a family sort of relationship than the traditional manager chair boss employee relationship?
No, we're a very clicky small group of not just football-minded people, but we're good friends off the field as well. And they bring different different mentalities towards the game. You know, Ollie McBride's very technical-minded, and he thinks about the game constantly. Jack Graham's a born leader. He's played at a decent level. He plays, you know, he's not only is he joint manager, he's also joint manager, player manager as well. So he can lead both on and off the field. But he's also supported by some good coaching staff, and we're just a unique team, small management team behind the scenes, really. And yes, we all know our roles, but we don't like to have a hierarchy. It's about a game. We're in it for the common goal, really, both on and off the field.
And that's interesting that you say that, because that's what, you know, I've not had the chance to come up to Wondershore and see what you're about, but I've looked at your website, I've looked at the stuff that you stick out on social, I've looked at the video, I've looked at photos. I mean, it looks, you know, certainly from the work that you've done at the ground, it's a very neat, tidy, professional work looking setup. You've got all that there, but it also looks like it's that we talk about it, but yeah, probably every other week on this show, that the successful non-league clubs are the ones that are like a family. They've got a business heart, and they run in that way. But everybody knows what they're doing. They get on to do it and pull together. And there isn't that hierarchy. There isn't that sort of, you know, I'm more important than everybody else. They're the ones that work.
We're a very level, you know, management structure, and like it's just one big team, both on and off the field. And you know, the committee, we don't really have a committee. This is the thing. We have we have four or five directors, but we're not ones that sit around a table and like a boardroom. We're nothing like that. But we get our hands dirty just as much as we enjoyed watching the football on Saturday afternoon anyway. And yes, we haven't been around a long time, you know, but people also got to remember is that, yes, we were born in 2014 from an open A side, but that ground was an empty field in 2019. And that's the kind of work we've put in the last 2.5-3 years. We've completely transformed it. And that's just through from sheer hard work, volunteering. We don't have any investors in there in the background loitering, you know, with money. All of it has been just pure graft. And that's how we've worked together. And you're only ever going to get that and get that success both in and around the field when you do pull together.
Mm. And it's interesting to see, you know, that family mentality that you've got, you know, you're young in history, as you say, but as a club, certainly size and breadth of the club, you haven't been limited by that. Am I right? And it's what, 22 clubs across various age groups?
Yeah, I mean, the juniors have been going probably in the junior says it's probably going for about 2006. It's only really in 2014 that we changed the name to FC St Helens and went quite independent on our own, standing around 2 feet. And we're working hard again, you know, to build our junior section up. You know, we've managed to work with the council to bring all our teams into one big venue now. So where we are at Windlesham Road, there's a large playing field to adjacent to us that we've managed to secure this season. So all our junior teams can now play in one big venue, on one big site. So when people come along to the ground on a Saturday from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m, it's all about FC St Helens playing football from ages from, you know, open age that right down to the kiddiewinks that are playing and just for a kickabout type thing. So, you know, interesting you say before, we try to portray as a non-league football club, and we like to think that our ground has that feel to it. But it's also, you know, it says in our legal entity, we're a community club at the end of the day. And, you know, yeah, it's all about being that community and being a benefit for everybody, no matter what the age or what capability or ability you are.
Well, I was going to, almost like you've seen my notes there, because I bang on week in, week out about, yeah, non-league clubs. We wouldn't be involved if we didn't love that sort of, yeah, it's wrong to call it amateur, but there's a it's different from the higher echelons of football, and that's why we love it. But we do need these clubs need to be run as a business, because, you know, at the end of the day, we still want to be there that in 2 years' time. But I did see that you're a community interests company. You've gone down that route, and which for me almost seems like a non-brainer for those involved in non-league football clubs. It keeps the community aspect at the front of everybody's mind. You can use it to protect the assets a little better than, you know, if someone is a limited company and if an investor comes in and you know there's the future of stadiums and that sort of. But you can probably also access a much wider range of funding pots too. So I'd imagine it's still a lot of work, but the community interest company side of things, it does interest me, and I think it's a great model to work to.
It is. I think that kind of model is sometimes overlooked. It's easy to set up a limited company, but it becomes its own problems. But as a CIC, you've got an investing interest to invest, reinvest those profits that are made, whether that's a profit through, you know, selling a pint over the bar or whatever money. It's all about investing in the site, and we've it's horrible to say because it was a traumatic area, but when the COVID hit, it kind of benefited us as a club structure a little bit, because there were a lot of funds out there that we could tap into. And that was our prime way of reinvesting in the site. So when we did come out the other side, we had a ground that we were proud of, and people could see that we invested monies that we're raising through community grants or the sheer grit or sponsorship or wherever the money comes from, that we've invested back into that site.
Yeah, and again, if you say, you know, Saturday is just all about football, the whole day is all about football on that site, mixed with your philosophy that appears to be education, development, and mixed with fun, it's surely no better way to encourage more people off the field to get involved with the senior club and building that club forward, because you've got people that are seeing it in action and getting, becoming part of the buzz, whether they understand it or not, and then they're more likely to come forward and want to help you out on a match day.
Yeah, that's 100%. I've seen that more so in the last 2 or 3 weeks, well, since the end of July, since the season started, more than any other time in the few years we've been going. Step Six Football gives you that opportunity. People do come out the woodwork or start to travel towards you, and we're starting to get the fruits of our labour now, that people start to come forward, you know, in key positions, whether that's physiotherapy or marketing or, you know, I've got no idea when it comes to social media, but the young lads that are, girls that are coming through, that's their world. So that people like that are starting to come through, photographers, and you really start to see the football taking a shape, if that's the best phrase to make. Even in the short few weeks we've been around in Step Six. So yes, 100%, it's starting to get the fruits of our loom, really.
Yeah, getting more exciting. And this weekend's match against North Ferriby, a club with a similarly short history as a club as they are now to yours, but obviously the town's former club, of course, former Vars runners-up, former FA Trophy winners. I remember reporting on them, you know, in the National League.
We could have picked an easier time, couldn't we?
And I guess that they're so far away from you as well. Your limited resources, Steps, you probably don't know much about them either.
No, I'd heard of them, but beyond, you know, I think it was 96, 97, the Vars, I think they came runners-up, if I remember recall. So not much more about that, but as soon as the draw was made and was made visual, there was lots of text messages coming in saying, what a draw that is, et cetera, and from a football perspective, I thought, yeah, absolutely, it's an amazing draw for us. From an administrator's point of view, sometimes I wish we were playing away.
I feel that pain, don't worry.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the pain is still carrying on up right to this moment. I mean, even this week, you know, because the ground developments we're doing is, the floodlights have not actually been switched on yet. And a part of the league rules, FA rules state that we have to have those league lights working order. That gets tested tonight. So they can get the certificate in by this evening so we can play the game on Saturday. So it's that build-up that's kind of took like glamour off it for me a little bit, because it's been really hard work. But once 10 a.m.'s gone tomorrow and I can relax and I know we're confident with, you know, that we've got a ground to that's capable and satisfactory to the FA, then yeah, I'm looking forward to the game in every way.
I know all about that red tape and that administrative thing. And for someone that had his fingers in fiddling with the floodlight failure that we had just before kickoff, the only midweek the other week. So, it's always there at the back of your mind. But I guess such a big game in your club's history. Are you hoping for a bumper gate this weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's one way of putting us on the map. I'm not quite sure how many people Ferry will bring themselves, but we've got some good local community interest in it as well, and all our junior teams have took a big interest in the game. So, you know, whether that's 100, 200, 300, who knows? It's all about the game for me and enjoying the moment and see whether we can pull off a good result and a good account for ourselves, really.
Yeah, and no replays again this season, so a result this weekend, celebrations, whatever that is, I guess.
Absolutely, yeah. 100% celebration, come win or lose, most definitely.
And it's all about the prestige, but the prize money, not massive. I'm sure it'll come in handy, though. £550, I think, for the winners this weekend, £160 for the runners-up, slightly bigger prize pot in the next round. I'd imagine, though, even if you, with those winnings, that you probably struggle to cover even the first round in the bar if you do win.
Yes, thank God we have got a bar taken because that's where we will make money and so we can do something with it. But I think that's what I mentioned before about the administration. Sometimes it's great to be awake, you can relax a little bit and you don't need to worry about paying your operations travel costs or splitting the gate fees or anything like that. But that's part and parcel of it, you know, and yes, it's nice to be at home, but sometimes it's nice to be away as well.
Yeah,
if we do get through this game tomorrow, on Saturday, then you know we've got another home game ahead of us.
Yeah, a quirk of this competition, isn't it? Your second qualifying round's already drawn. You know you're at home, but I guess that Rossington Main or Parkgate, it's intriguing, but it's probably not something you want to think about yet.
Absolutely not. No, let's get till 5 o'clock on Saturday first and see what happens then.
well, I'll certainly be looking out for the result, and I'm sure many of our listeners will. And it's great, always great to hear from new clubs on this show. And the way that you're doing it, it sounds like you're doing it the right way, and it sounds like you're a great person to be directing at the top there. So, Steve Lever, thanks for joining us on the Non-League Football Show, and best of luck for the rest of the season.
It's a pleasure, and thanks for your time. And hopefully, sing our cheers on Monday. Thanks very much.
So, time to head on over to Non-League Paper Towers, and welcome back to the Non-League Show to Editor-at-Large, Mr. Bad, Matt Cox.
Keep it formal.
Mr. Matt Badcock from the Non-League Paper. How are you, Matt?
I'm very well, Mr. Few. How are you?
Well, clearly very tired, because those words in my head just seem to be getting more and more jumbled up, but... The season's just only just underway, and we spoke to Phil Annetts once again this week with his FA Vars hat on, and I imagine plenty of coverage of the 176 ties in this weekend's paper, but probably some of last week's FA Cup replays. It really is a time when the depth of football across non-league becomes very apparent.
It does. There's a lot of games being played in lots of different competitions, and it's quite a challenge to keep up with it sometimes, but yeah, I think when you say 176 ties in the Vars, think how many clubs that is, and there's still more to come in, and it just shows how many, as we've said before in the FA Cup, how many ties have been in that competition already, how many teams have been knocked out from the FA Cup already. It's quite incredible. But this is the fun part of the season where everybody has, as we said last week, all these hopes and dreams of having great cup runs and Vars runs and trophy when that comes along as well.
Yeah, all the hopes and dreams of those cup competitions are, again, still early days. We're nowhere near that 10-game mark, although a little bit nearer than when we spoke last week for those league tables. Chesterfield continuing to look strong, and they face maybe surprise tabletoppers Barnet. Two Friday night games this weekend, which I don't know whether that upsets the apple cart for the non-league paper when you're trying to lay out pages and things like that, but... we'll probably have a bit more of an understanding of how this early table is panning out from those results on Friday night.
Yeah, I think from a slightly selfish point of view, looking at how much live stuff there is on Saturday, a couple of Friday night games are actually quite welcome. I think there's some in the Step 3 as well. So always nice to get a couple of early ones in. Obviously, it's a very busy bank holiday weekend. yeah, it's kind of one of those. It's can be a very profitable few days for some clubs, and others may not feel the same when they come out of it come sort of Monday early evening. So yeah, lots to sort of keep an eye on over the weekend. But it's sort of nice. It sort of kicks off a little bit on Friday evening, and there's lots going on in the Vars on Friday. In the Vars and Friday as well. But yeah, Chesterfield, Barnet, I mean, Chesterfield had that brilliant result against Wrexham, didn't they? And they followed up 2-0 down to 2-0 up against Notts County on Saturday, and Notts got it back, and it would have been some week if they managed to hold on for the 3 points there. But as you say, welcoming Barnet, who've started brilliantly this season, 3 wins out of 4 and a draw. So I think if you looked at kind of the recruitment that Dean Brennan did through the summer, I think often there's lots of predictions that they were going to struggle and things, but actually the recruitment was quite did look quite good on paper. So obviously started well. It's always nice for clubs to get off onto that that solid base coming in, and as we say, coming to this busy weekend now.
Yeah, and I think we mentioned Dorking Wanderers last week, but first season in that top step, 18 goals for those watching their 4 games. Looks like value for money there.
Yeah, I think it's, if you want a few goals, get down and watch Dorking. It's solid. I've shared a few, haven't they? Unbelievable game against Scunthorpe. They won 4-3 on Saturday. They've had 16 goals in their games as well. So it's lots of action, and that's what we like to see. You know, love to go and watch these helter-skelter games where lots going on. I mean, yeah, if you Halifax fans would love that at the moment. They're the only team who haven't got on the score sheet yet, so they'll be sure looking to change that this weekend. And that's again the beauty of the bank holiday. You get a couple of games in a few days, and you can get a couple of wins, and everything feels a lot better when you come through the other side. And it's obviously a lot to ask of players, and it's going to be a busy weekend for them, but that's kind of the what many of them are used to.
It'll be interesting to see the other side of that bank holiday weekend. Well, step two again, we've still got Kings Lynn. They've got four wins from four, and in the National South we've got Ebbsfleet four wins from four as well. Weymouth still four defeats in four, but a couple of games that the whole table can turn around and soak in the season.
Yeah, that's it. I think we're getting into that stage now where the non-league paper starts looking at who's won a few games, and then the calls start coming into managers, and they say, "Oh, now you're ringing me. Now it's going well." But come with a curse to sort of ruin weekends. I spoke to Stuart Mason at Wilstone this week, so apologies to Wilstone fans if it doesn't go very well up at Gateshead on Saturday.
Yeah, we enjoy all the great stuff about football, but there's also always invariably a sad story every week as well. I was sad to see in the Southern Counties East Football League this week, Kent Football United have had some great success in recent years, but really reliant on a couple of people and their entourage around them and themselves. They put so much into the club, but couldn't manage the juggle of that club and other football and family commitments without a succession plan, really. And it basically looks like the club's going to be no more. Reading the statement that they've put out, it looks like Sam McNeill and Roy McNeill, they've taken much praise for all the work they've done, but they're also getting a lot of criticism for pulling out of this stage of the season. But I think everybody has to remember that these are real people who have put much into their club, and as a result, they've been offered football opportunities elsewhere that really you wouldn't expect them to deny. And I think until you've run a club, you don't really have the idea of the stress, the time, the burdens that come with that. And looking at some of these criticisms they're getting, you have people suggesting they're selfish to fold the club and put their own life ahead of the club's survival, but there's also only so much a person can give, I guess, to their club.
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. I think it's sad to see, and it's not ideal for the league and the competitions that the club goes so soon. And so they've got their reasons that they will know and kind of what they live through. As it's difficult for me. Unless you've run a club, you don't really have any idea. But you know how much goes in and how much has to go in, and how much pressures and demands are on people who run clubs, and in their spare time and around all their other commitments. And you kind of hope that this isn't something that we'll keep seeing over the coming years, because, you know, one of the big things that non-league football is going to face is kind of that volunteer workforce and keeping that stream going. And people I talk to in the game, there's that question mark: have a lot of people's lives changed now? Do people have as much time to give? There's so many more demands and pressures in life, and so much more kind of competing for people. And that's where, you know, if people do want to get involved in their local clubs, you know, and we have to encourage it. And clubs have to, you know, clubs will be trying to get people in all the time and get, let's just say, extra hands to help with all that goes into it. I think we can, from the outside, can kind of forget, as you say, how much has to be done just to get a game of football on a Saturday, let alone keep a club going all through a season, week after week, and everything that comes with that. It's not an easy task.
It's not an easy task, and you know, there are people at the heart of this as well, and there are, you know, as in anything in life, you always have limits, or you have to make difficult decisions. You have to have those sliding doors moments. And I guess one other story that grabbed my attention, I don't profess to be any sort of expert on Love Island, and I'm sure you're the same, but it may appear that Love Island is the option for a career in social media or maybe influencing, but it's not the option for your non-league football career. There's been a number of non-league footballers sort of gone the Love Island route, and it's not maybe sort of been the greatest thing for their football career. And Jamie Allen missed pre-season with Halifax Town earlier on this year, which I think led to his contract being voided, and now it also looks like he's gone for good from Halifax. So again, those sliding door moments, yeah, do you go Love Island or do you go to pre-season?
Yeah, difficult one. I'm probably not suited to either, so maybe I'll get the call up.
Maybe a pre-season Love Island. Maybe that's where we could both fit in.
Never know. But yeah, it does seem to be kind of a route that a lot of football. There must be some kind of casting agents, I guess, going around like non-league grounds, like scouts or something. Maybe, I don't know. How does it work? I don't understand it all. But yeah, I think we've seen with, you say Jamie Allen's been released by Halifax. I think it's kind of, it seems to me that from kind of this and other stories in the past on this, that this comes some sort of quite a secret before they go. And I think clubs obviously find out right at the last minute, which doesn't always go down very well, as we've kind of seen. And I think when he first went on there, I think Halifax put kind of a tweet out that was a bit ominous, sort of saying, you know, we'll be addressed when he returns, or something along kind of along those lines. And obviously they've made the decision to move on from him. I know I've seen a piece before with Finn Tapp, who was at Oxford City and went on there and sort of struggling to find a club. But it's kind of, you know, players have to make decisions about where they want to go and what they want to do in life. And then, you know, some of it's not, you know, it's kind of there up to them if they have to sort of be footballers. It's, you know, whilst might be a lot of people's dreams, and maybe one of their dreams at some point, but there's other opportunities. I know Luke Trotman, who was out, you know, excellent player, right back. He played for England C. Really, really, you know, went away with him a couple of times. Really lovely lad and very switched on. And he was actually, when we were out in Estonia, was kind of doing exams for uni in the hotel in the between games and stuff, and he had a really, really devastating injury at Darlington that put him out for a long period of time. That's when he kind of went on Love Island, and now he's doing lots of different things, and, you know, social media, and, you know, earning, I'm sure a good living that way. And I guess there is that kind of, as you say, sliding doors. You know, football can go either way, a bad injury, and that can cut that. Got to take opportunities when they come along, and that's maybe how some of these lads look at it. And they can, you know, I'm sure someone will come along and Jamie Allen, a new avenue to explore in terms of football, because he's obviously a decent player for sure.
Yeah, and it is a bit like when your star striker goes off for as the fans would call it, an additional pound note. At the end of the day, it's, you know, if you were in a walk of life where you were offered, you know, additional money to go somewhere else, sometimes you have to think that this is a once in a lifetime opportunity and go off and do it. And look, we've got to understand that the world of non-league football, the world that we enjoy, has got to change as well. You know, one thing that I think will probably get us thinking, maybe get us talking over the coming weeks, is a number of leagues have allowed clubs to kick off early to avoid floodlight use. I think there's a few going ahead this weekend like that as well, because of the current economic crisis and fuel costs. And that's likely to continue into the winter. So with more and more 12:30 p.m. kickoffs and maybe 2 p.m. kickoffs, maybe across the pyramid, as a byproduct, that could change football even more, because current FA rules forbid streaming of live football between, I think, 2:45 and 5:15 p.m. on a Saturday. But if games are kicking off early, then that's outside that blackout and could therefore mean that games across non-league football could be streamed on a Saturday. Now, is that going to be good for the game? It's certainly going to change everything at our non-league level.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see how this pans out, this sort of option to change kickoff times and bring them forward. And I think generally the issue around the energy crisis that everybody's going to be feeling, you know, it's just been all over the news just now. And, you know, I think everyone's kind of thinking, well, how is this going to affect me and what am I going to have to change? And it's going to be for clubs, I think. Mark Harris wrote a piece for the paper a couple of weeks ago talking about, you know, some clubs, how some of their costs have rocketed, and it is a challenge that, you know, is kind of coming. You all know, I think everyone's waiting to see what happens with it and what the government kind of do. I think from past experience, we know that you know, they probably don't know themselves in many ways. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. As you say, it does open up that stream revenue that some clubs enjoyed exploring through COVID, and it worked for some, and we saw kind of the how clubs were able to adapt to that, and the, you know, the advances in how sort of, it's kind of, you know, a few years ago that would have been kind of unthinkable, that games would be being streamed live and you could sort of pop on your TV and watch. But it will be interesting, obviously there's the other side of it with players who work in Saturday mornings, and you know, clubs, you know, still some sizable journeys as well, and if clubs having to get places for half 12. It's not always going to be, you know, they're not always going to want to do that. You know, obviously the games have to be moved, don't they, with both clubs' agreement. But, you know, it's not kind of a silver bullet for everything. So it will be interesting to kind of see how it pans out and how people take to it. I mean, so lots of Friday night games, will that kind of continue through? Because, you know, I think some clubs have seen that as a good way of getting extra people through the gate, having games on Friday nights as well. And, you know, obviously clubs will then be competing with big Premier League games, and, you know, does that make a difference? It's going to kind of be fascinating watching and see and kind of see if trends and patterns emerge out of it.
Yeah, and I think it will be one of those we will have to suck and see and see what happens. And non-league has always been adaptable and always sort of comes up with solutions that work, and they're probably not the solutions that we'd be thinking of at the moment either. It almost non-league is very innovative, and we will find a way through it, but hopefully it's a way through where the majority of clubs can still enjoy it rather than just a select handful of clubs. Obviously, we mentioned FA Cup from last week, FA Vars this weekend. We've got lots of league games. You've got your Friday night games. There's games in the Vars on Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Plenty to report on in this weekend's non-league paper. Anything else you can flag up for us this weekend then, Matt?
Yeah, all of that, as you say, lots going on live game-wise over the coming days. So with respect to Stuart Maynard at Wealdstone, I've also caught up with Steve McNulty. So he won the conference and National League many times, lots of promotions for his career, obviously Fleetwood, Luton, Tranmere won promotion, and now going into the world of management, he's gone in at Bootle at Step 4, and I've had a catch up with him and how he's looking forward to throwing himself into it. He's kind of been wanting to go down this route for a little while. He did a Spurs assistant at Chester to Steve Watson, and he's worked under some pretty good managers in his time, Mickey Mellon and John Steele to name sort of a couple, and he's had success all over the place at Barrow as well. And he's looking forward to making that transition, and as he says, kind of We always had like such great dressing rooms and great characters in the teams that I was successful in, and he's going to try and build that Bootle, which is his local club, and it's the first step on his managerial career. So had a good chat with him, and lots of other bits in there. Caught up with Jimmy Dean at Peterborough Sports. All the usual favourites, Grant Hopper and Tony Incenzo's. Written a piece for this week as well. So lots going on, plenty in there, and you say lots of live action to keep us all entertained.
It's an exciting time to be a non-league fan. Matt Batcock, thank you for joining us on the Non-League Football Show. Have a great weekend. We'll speak to you soon.
Thanks, Tim. Speak next week.
And that's it for this week. Thank you as ever to my guests. Good luck to FC St Helens and all involved in the FA Vars this weekend. Finally, a big thank you to all of you for listening. Don't forget to tell your friends, share the pod, it all helps. You can of course follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show, myself there at Tim Fuel, F-U-E-L-L, and as ever you can find us every week on Audio Boom, on Apple Podcasts, also Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, CastBox, iHeart, Geo7, Listen Notes, Overcast, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Radio Republic, via smart speakers and all good podcast aggregation sites. Some pretty poor ones as well, but it's great to be on there. It's great for people to be listening. Stay safe, thank you, and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn. But hurry, these offers won't last forever. Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.